Welcome. This is our first audio PowerPoint lecture. Last week you listened to an audio Prezi. This week we'll have an audio PowerPoint. I will switch it up every week. Sometimes I'll do PowerPoints, sometimes I'll do Prezis. I want to read you a quote and then I'll just briefly talk about it. The historian is just another dim figure trudging along in another part of the procession. And as the procession winds along, swerving now to the right and now to the left, and sometimes doubling back on itself, the relative positions of different parts of the procession are constantly changing. New vistas, new angles of vision constantly appear as the procession and the historian with it moves along. The historian is part of history. The point in the procession at which he finds himself determines his angle of vision over the past. This quote comes from a book called What is History? By Edward Carr. And there's a lot of different ways you can talk about this quote, but the one way I want you to think about this quote is that as we go through this textbook and we learn about world history from Neanderthal man to 1700, I want you to think about the people who are writing our history books. They are historians. And every historian comes at the study of history with his or her own lens. And the historian is actually a part of the history-making process. And they bring into the study of history their own personal baggage and the time and the place in which they live. And that's why when the quote says the relative positions of different parts of the procession are constantly changing, new vistas, new angles of vision constantly appear as the procession and the historian with it moves along. As historians grow in their field and as more information is uncovered, sometimes the historical story will change. So sometimes what we think we know to be true ends up not being true at all. And I'll talk more about that as we continue on with this lecture. Role of a historian, because we're not just studying history this semester, we're actually in some cases trying to become historians ourselves. The key thing that you want to remember is that historians are interested in change over time or the lack of change over time. That is really what a historian thinks about when he or she studies artifacts and documents from the past. When historians look at the past, they ask themselves, how and why things have changed, and how and why things have remained the same. They're looking for constants and changes. Now, as I said from the first slide, the historical record is constantly being revised. The facts of history remain the same, like the dates of a war. But as historians uncover more primary documents and more interpretations about the past, revisions are made to the historical record, and that's not a bad thing. Here's another quote that I want to talk briefly about. The historian's first task is finding the evidence. Documents, letters, memoirs, interviews, pictures, movies, novels, or poems can provide the facts and the clues. Then the historian questions and compares the sources. There's more to do than in a courtroom, for hearsay evidence is welcome. And the historian is usually looking for answers beyond act and motive. Different views of an event may be as important as a single verdict. How a story is told may yield as much information as what it says. Along the way, the historian seeks help from other historians and perhaps from specialists in other disciplines. Finally, it is time to write, to decide on an interpretation, and how to arrange the evidence for readers. And once again, this quote has lots of different levels of meaning, but what I want you to take away from this quote is the fact that that history is created by looking at evidence. In the historical world, evidence comes in the form of documents, letters, interviews, movies, pictures, etc. And it's after historians immerse themselves in what's called primary documents, and I'll talk about that on the next slide, they start to interpret the past. But their interpretation is based on the time in which they are living. They can't base their interpretation on a different time or place because they bring to it the knowledge from their own time period. And the way someone tells a story in the 1950s is going to be different than the story that's told in the 2010 era. Already, look at how stories are told today with the internet and email and social media. So all of that goes into how we as historians understand the past and explain the past. Now, historians' primary role is to understand the past and explain that past through primary sources and artifacts. Life never stays still. What we see is that species, animal species, rise and fall in bursts of evolution and extinction. And diversity increases, though it's not steady, because ecosystems change and organisms respond to those changes. Predators and prey develop new attacks and defenses. And occasionally we're going to have mass extinctions, which will eliminate whole groups of people and animals. And this will create new opportunities for the survivors. Some animal species will adapt, and they'll evolve new features and behaviors. Others will not adapt, and they'll become extinct. And this is really what historians are interested in doing. They want to understand this evolutionary process. And to do this, they'll rely on primary documents, secondary sources, and artifacts. And it's through all of these different sources that they'll be able to start painting a picture of what happened. And just after reading chapter one last week, you've already started to see how historians have begun to tell the tale of the past. And you'll already have learned about extinction and the rise and fall of new species when you look at early man. Now, I know I gave you some readings last week to kind of explain primary sources and primary documents and secondary sources, but let me just go into them in a little more detail. So a primary source is something, a document or something that was created or written during that particular moment you're studying. So at the same time as the event. It can include diaries, newspaper articles, musical pieces, paintings, drawings, texts, TV shows, emails, social media like tweets. Those are all primary sources because they're written at the moment of the time you're studying. A secondary source is material written about an event later, and it usually utilizes primary sources. So your history textbook is a secondary source. It took lots and lots of primary documents, it evaluated those primary documents, and it's the author's interpretation of those documents and what they say that create that secondary source. Historians are also interested in artifacts. Artifacts are human-made objects such as a tool, a weapon, or a piece of jewelry, or any kind of entity, a piece of clothing, etc. And you can use these artifacts to help understand a people from the past. Now, this is really important to understand. While the facts of history stay the same, the understanding of the events will change. And this is really key because right in the very early chapters of our textbook, the historians are still grappling with some of the discussions. And we keep seeing this revision to the record. This is a skull that was found from an early hominid. It was found in the Republic of Georgia in 2001. And the Republic of Georgia used to be part of the Soviet Union. This skull is dated to 1.75 million years ago. This discovery that was found 12 years ago has really caused scientists a lot of grief. And I say it's caused them a lot of grief because it's a discovery that's making scientists rethink their previous assumptions about what the earliest humans outside of Africa looked like. Scientists didn't really think that the original hominids coming out of Africa could have had such a tiny brain. They had always equated brain size with intelligence. And this particular skull that you're looking at has a tiny brain. So it wasn't thought that something of this small size could have actually migrated. But because this skull was found in the Republic of Georgia, well away from Africa, scientists have had to rethink some of their earlier thoughts. In fact, one scientist said, "I wish we could just stuff this skull back in the ground." And he said that because, though he was excited about this discovery, it's causing a lot of the past information they once thought about brain size and intelligence to be null and void. So it was a long-held belief that the first hominid to leave Africa was Homo erectus, a big-brained hominid. The skull found in the medieval town of Georgia, however, suggests something far more primitive. When reconstructed, the newest prehistoric find resembles a chimp-like Homo habilis, which was a hominid with long arms, short legs, and a brain less than half as large as a modern human's. That was quite startling. According to your textbook, while there's disagreement on how long an essential human species, as distinct from primates, has existed, they have kind of coalesced on the number of 2.5 million years. And your textbook basically says this is approximately 1/4,000th of the time the Earth has existed. And I like the analogy your textbook uses. They say, if one thinks of the whole history of the Earth to date as a 24-hour day, the human species began at about 5 minutes until midnight. So human beings have existed for less than 5% of the time mammals of any sort have lived. That's really quite startling. And once again, they still know so little about period. Because of this new discovery in the Republic of Georgia, scientists and paleoanthropologists are thinking that maybe the first human to walk out of Africa wasn't the classic Homo erectus, a creature with a big brain and the ability to make complex stone tools, but maybe it was something much more primitive, a kind of missing link between Homo erectus and the first member of the Homo habilis family. This is a perfect example of how history is continually being revised. And it was being revised by finding new primary sources, new artifacts, and revisiting previously looked at documents. And I have another change to the historical record. This is a little fun factoid. I call my fun factoids Mannion Mind Flexes. What do you think this is? Take a second to talk to your computer. I'm assuming many of you guessed that it's a female's undergarment. And if that's what you guessed, you're entirely correct. Here is another picture of a female undergarment. Now, this discovery has been in the recent last few years. And experts were surprised by the discovery of a of four female undergarments in an Austrian castle. And these undergarments are dated to be about 600 years old. This has really perplexed historians and anthropologists because they thought that the brazier was basically only 100 years old. They believed, the common thought process was that women started to wear brassieres about 100 years ago when they abandoned the tight corsets. However, these four linen versions unearthed by archaeologists, again in an Austrian castle, date back 600 years. That's startling. Hilary Davidson, a fashion curator at the Museum of London, said one specimen in particular looks exactly like a modern piece of underwear, and that was the one you saw in the earlier slide. So once again, this is just another example of how when new artifacts, when new primary documents come to light, scientists need to redress their thinking and come up with a new understanding of the past. And that's what we're going to be doing this semester. We're going to be looking at what historians have told us about the past and trying to make our own decisions as to whether we agree with what they've said. That's all for this particular lecture.